This is part two, where we begin our conversation with Forward Podcast and the school shooting.
So speaking about Forward Podcast, do you want to explain more about the podcast? Like, what's it about? Why did you start it? What the message to your listeners?
Totally. So I had been wanting to create a podcast for many years and never had really done it for a few reasons, including the fact that I was like nervous, because the story is a very vulnerable story. And it tells the true story, based on the true story of what happened when I was 15 years old and there was a shooting at my high school, which, you know, unfortunately has become such a reoccurring problem. It's like kind of part of all of our lives. Like, I don't know if you guys have drills at your school, but like, I think most schools in the United States, like, it's kind of part of the deal, you know? So anyway, this happened to me when I was 15. And so the story that I wrote is about my own reaction to it. And then my immediate family, the ways in which we healed or sometimes didn't, because we didn't have great coping skills. I mean, no one knows how to deal when something that horrible happens. And so that was basically what Forward is about, is the aftermath, because the reporters go away after it happens and everyone's like, that's sad, and then they move on. But really, in my opinion, the aftermath is just as interesting, because it deals with like people who are really struggling with their own mental health and don't know where to go and don't know what's normal and what's not normal. And that's the idea.
Yeah, I remember for us, like in school, I think it was like 2 years back, but all of a sudden, we were in break. I'm not really sure, but we were in break, and you know, all of a sudden, like there was this, I think it was like the office, the people just spoke through like, please go to your classes. Yeah. And then we were under lockdown, like they just shut the curtains, and you know,
oh my God.
We hid in the classroom, and I was like, oh my God, this is so scary. And everyone was like texting, and the thing is, you're not supposed to text, because you know, you can cause panic, and maybe, you know, that's the reason, the whole point, right? You don't want to text anyone. And so we were kind of,
at the same time, like, you want your family to know like what's going on, and that you're like, okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that was a rule that you're not allowed to text.
Yeah. So but still a lot of people were texting, you know, no matter what. But it was, so apparently like there was someone armed outside, and I don't know, someone like stole something, and they were running. And so the school authorities were like, okay, you know what, everyone has to go under lockdown. And I think it was like for an hour we were like that. And then after
that must have been terrifying, because
yeah,
like you don't know what's going on. Exactly. And like you don't know if your life is in danger or not.
Yeah, I was having like, you know, bad thoughts in my head. I'm like, oh my God, what's like, does that person have a gun? What if the person's like right there, you know, by the door? And so it was really scary for me to like handle mentally. So Taylor, you were like a survivor of a shooting that happened in 2006, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how did it affect you, like mentally and physically? And can you tell us a little bit more about like the shooter also?
Yeah. So just the basics of what happened. And if you choose to listen to the podcast, then you'll hear like the whole story, like every detail. And it, you know, is very dark, but essentially what happened is there was a man who had very severe mental illness, and he had bipolar one and was hallucinating. And as far as any of us know, there was no real connection to my high school. It was just kind of random, but he was homeless. He was living out of his Jeep. And one day he wandered into our school, and he went into a classroom that was down the hall from where I was. So he was kind of at this end, and then I was at this end. And exactly as you described it, and that's the thing, you don't know if it's real or not. The announcement comes over the intercom. They say, this is a code white situation. We need everyone to lock down. And as a student in 2006, I didn't know what that meant, because we didn't do drills at that time. Columbine had happened in 1999, but there was like a big gap between the two, and schools just hadn't really incorporated that into their protocol. So when it happened, we were all like, is this real? And it's scary because you don't know if it's real, but next thing you know, we're hearing gunshots, and you know, we were teenagers, so, and we were scared. And so we were kind of like joking of like, oh no, that was just a door slamming, or that wasn't real. This couldn't possibly be real, because your brain can't even wrap around the reality of like, oh my God, this is actually happening. And in the podcast, I try and tell the perspective of like, people had very different reactions, from people who were being like jokey and like not accepting it at all, to people who were in hysterics, which, you know, makes sense. Different people have different reactions to scary stuff. But anyway, we were under lockdown for a long time, very similar to what you described. And then when we were finally evacuated, we learned that there had been a classroom that was taken hostage. They kicked out all the boys and the teacher, and then they kicked out all the girls who were not blonde. And then there were 6 girls left. And then one by one, the hostage negotiator was able to get most of them out. One girl was killed, and when she died, he shot himself. And so, yeah, it was really, really bad. And so part of the story I'm trying to tell is that even if you weren't in that room specifically, oh God, it still impacted you a lot. If you were a sibling of somebody who was in the building, if you were the parent of somebody in the building, if you were their coach, if you were their boss, like, it affected everyone. It even within like a few degrees of separation, and no one talks about that part. You had asked me like, what were the repercussions for me? And it's changed a lot throughout the years. But I believe that pretty much everybody in the community had PTSD. And with PTSD, like, different people have different symptoms, but for me, I was having like really bad nightmares, like really, 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 really bad. And because I was young and immature, I was like, if I drink enough caffeine, I can just not sleep. Not a good idea, but that's what I thought as a 15-year-old. So like, you come up with like not healthy ways to deal with these very serious things that are going on in your brain. It caused a lot of like kind of panic attack stuff. And that's a really scary feeling, because you don't know like what's happening or like how to make it stop. And like, as an adult, I have learned how to make it stop. But like, I didn't know that when I was 15. There were a lot of things that like scared me that weren't very logical. Like, I'd hear like a firework and like jump out of my skin, you know, or like an intercom would ding. And I like thought that like, oh, it's happening again. Like, you know, when you hear people describe like flashbacks, mm-hmm. It's kind of like that kind of thing, where a person with PTSD, it's like your brain thinks that you're back there, like for real, even though you're not. Like, the man who committed the crime at my high school as a homeless man. So within the next like few years after the shooting, sometimes I would see a homeless man and have this like horrible, like knee-jerk reaction that I knew was like wrong and politically incorrect and inaccurate. But I would think like, that man has a gun, he's going to kill me. And I like really believed that in my head, even though that is not logical. And as you get older, and you know, for people who choose to go to therapy, I decided to go to see a therapist. And that was really helpful, because she could help me understand like, okay, some of the stuff, like, it's going to fade over time, or you can learn strategies so that it affects you less over time. And that has been true. Like, in more recent years, like, the firework thing doesn't bother me anymore. And it was like, one day I went to a firework show and it was great. And I went home and I would turn on the news and they were like, yeah, some veterans don't like fireworks. And I was like, I wonder why, like, why does that? And then I realized like, oh, you've been afraid of fireworks for like 10 years. And for some reason it was just gone. And I don't know what that was, if it was therapy or if it was time, or I don't know. But yeah, there's just like a lot of stuff that gets a little wonky in your brain after you go through anything that's horribly traumatic, like not even just a shooting, but I feel like most people in their lifetimes go through something that's really awful. And when that happens, you know, it takes a long time to get back to a place where you feel normal, if ever. And yeah, so that's part of what the story of Forward is about, is that you don't just like snap back. Like, after something really bad happens to you, you're a changed person, and the way that your brain works might be a little bit different.
So make sure to check it out. Forward Podcast, link in the description.
Awesome. Yeah. I hope people will.
Yeah, it's really crazy how, like, in this time, you know, it's shootings, or, you know, it's like a common thing now. It's like part of our lives, you know. Yeah, our schools definitely have, you know, these drills every once in a while that we, you know, practice lockdown drills and, like, have these special rules. Like, you know, the kids get assigned, like, we have, like, special jobs. Like, you know, a group of kids will get the board and, like, put it behind the door. A group of kids will, you know, put the chairs behind the door, and we have all these procedures and stuff.
What is your opinion on that? Because it has become fairly controversial that some people are like, this is good, it's important, we need to prepare people. And then some people are like, well, that's freaking traumatic. And it, probably, I have not had the experience of doing drills, but it seems like it would be pretty unsettling.
Yeah, it definitely is, you know, kind of scary to think about, like, wow, we have, like to think of, just to think about, like, we have to do this. But on, yeah, I think it is important to me, because, like, it's, you have no idea when it's going to happen, you know, you have no idea. You just come to school one day, you'll think it's a normal day, and suddenly something happens, and, you know, it might be crazy, but, like, if you have a plan, I think it's more, you get more prepared, you'll be like, oh, okay, so, like, I know what to do. So I think it is an important thing to do.
You make a good point. I mean, it is, unfortunately, a reality of living in the United States. And until something changes and it becomes not a reality, unfortunately, people do have to prepare for that possibility. So that, it's interesting you bring it up that way.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think it's important, too, to have certain drills, because, like, as Mega said, it's really, it's like a common thing now in the United States. It's been, like, happening, like, maybe once a month. I don't know. Like, I've always seen in the news, like, about some shootings happening in Texas. Yeah. Other states,
there's been,
like, you know, you're having, like, a nice year, like, really happy, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, there's a shooter, active shooter, just you know, someone saw someone, and then it's like, or you heard gunshots, like, I can't, you know, life is unpredictable. So I think it's important that you should do those drills, even though it may, like you said, Taylor, like, dramatic, and, like, really, like, oh my god, like, why would you do that, such a thing, right? And so I think it's important, because, like, it makes you prepared, right, for the future. And, like, even if it does really happen, like, that situation does happen, you know what to do then. It's kind of like an earthquake.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you guys think of it that way. I mean, and I think it's just, like, a sign of the times. I mean, you're exactly right on. I mean, there's been 304 fatal school shootings since Columbine. So, and that's just, like, from an article that was published, like, a year ago or something. And since then, there's been so many more. And it's not just in schools. It's at festivals. It's in churches. Exactly. It's in movie theaters. It's, like, so I think you're probably right. It probably is something, like, once a month, if you really, like, go, like, where are all of the shootings happening. And it's almost become, like, not shocking anymore when you see it on the news, which is so disturbing. And that's part of why I've made Forward as well, because it's like, it should be disturbing, you know, like, that's not, it's not normal. It's not normal that you guys should have to experience that in your high schools. And, you know, pre-Columbine, no one had to do lockdown drills. And in other countries, people don't have to do lockdown drills. Like, I did an interview like this recently with this gal from Luxembourg, and she was, like, so confused. She's like, can you explain to me, like, and wait, why do you have school shooting drills? Like, why is that? And it's hard to explain to someone who lives in a country where this does not happen. And it, I don't know, it's so weird that it is, unfortunately, like, a part of our reality.
Yeah, it could happen anywhere. It's not just schools. Like, I think not last year, the year before, that my family was actually planning to go to the Gilroy Gardens Garlic Festival, if you guys ever heard of it.
Yes. Yeah, I heard about that.
Gonna go, but, like, the week before, we had some party or something, so we decided, like, you know, we shouldn't go, we should go to the party instead. And then, you know, on the day, we found out, like, there was a shooting, and my mom and me were, like, shocked. We're like, we were supposed to go there, and we were like, oh my god, this is, you know, so scary, because it can happen anywhere at any time.
Totally. Like, thank goodness you had a change of plans, but, like, that is terrifying, you know? Like, it's weird that we've just, like, gotten used to the fact that we have to, like, look for exits when we go into, like, buildings, or, like, I don't know. It's just so creepy to me. Like, I have a friend who's a teacher, and she's like, yeah, the teachers keep litter boxes under their desk in case of a lockdown, so that kids have somewhere to go to the bathroom if they're under lockdown for so many hours. And she's like, it's so practical. And I'm like, what? what? Like, that is insane. Like, the fact that that is a thing is so twisted. And we've just become, it's just like normalized. I think it's so bizarre.
I think a lot of like political candidates and like a lot of politicians too are also talking about like gun violence in general, like their opinions about it. And, you know, like my friends, you know, after the election, they were all talking about, there were like a lot of stuff on Instagram, like posts on their, on my feed. I was like, and I was like swiping and reading some information about gun violence, like, oh, vote for this person because they will promote less guns or something like that. And so there's a lot of people, it's like, again, as like you said, Taylor, it's like really controversial topic to talk about. And like, yeah, like I feel like, you know, our president or like they should do something about it to like, you know, maybe like lessen the amount of guns.
Yeah, so something that
the shootings won't happen in the United States and we can, you know, safely go to school.
The thing is, like, I believe that there are solutions because this doesn't happen in other countries. It makes me think there has got to be a way to change this because this is like a uniquely American problem, but it's a complicated thing because in our culture in the United States, it is politicized. It doesn't really have to be, but it is. And in Creating Forward, it's been really interesting because I've been having conversations with people who are very conservative and people who are very liberal and asking them like, what do you think we should do? Because at the end of the day, pretty much everyone agrees they don't want their kid to be killed in a school shooting. Like that is that part, not controversial. You know, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be afraid to go to church or to go to a garlic festival. You know, it like no one wants that. And like, I get that we live in a country where like gun rights are important to people, but I don't think that most responsible gun owners, I don't think they want guns to be in the hands of people who have severe mental illness and very violent tendencies, you know? And if we could change that piece, then maybe things could change. Yeah. But I do think that it requires people who have different political beliefs to find a compromise. And instead it's so polarizing that it's either like, no one can own a gun or like everyone should own a gun. And it's like, no, but I think there's an in-between.
Yeah, this topic, yeah, it's very controversial. Everyone has their own different opinions that it's like so hard to, you know, come up with one.
Talk about a solution, yeah.
One solution, yeah, because, yeah. And it's, you know, it's such a dangerous thing, you know, like I'm against, you know, the gun use. I think, it, you know, there should be laws, you know, more stricter laws. And yeah, so yeah, I think it's like, as you were mentioning in your experience, like people, people around you like who just heard the gunshot can suffer from PTSD. And I think it's very important for other people to realize that in this is very important. And as you said, like reporters don't really, you know, talk about that as much. So I think it's really important how you, in your podcast, you discuss it.
Yeah. And hopefully, like, I think we just need to bring this to people's attention because it's not just like the kids who were in the room or the kids who witnessed the shooter. It's like a whole community. And like, you think about like what just recently happened at the Capitol, like probably all of those people have PTSD in all likelihood. And those are the people who are like the leaders in the United States and like making our laws. And they are probably not sleeping at night because they are probably having horrible nightmares and panic attacks and whatever. And it's like, these are like groups of like thousands and thousands of people. If you take, like you just said, there's been, you know, one a month, let's say. And then there's like at least 1,000 people affected every time. So it's like a huge percentage of the United States has been affected in some way by gun violence. And like, that seems really troubling that there are a lot of people walking around with that specific trauma when perhaps there's a way to avoid it or change it.
Yeah, like I believe too, like you guys, both of you guys said that, you know, there should be laws, like you need a license to own a gun. And like you said, Taylor, like you should own a gun, you know, you shouldn't maybe own a gun if you have like disorders or PTSD, like you said, right?
So, yeah. Well, like the guy who did what he did at my school had a criminal record and still had like 10 guns. And I'm like, why did he not have to have a background check? And it's confusing because like apparently his nephew also bought a couple guns for him at the last minute too. So like it was like a younger person bought them for him because maybe then it wasn't legal or something. But still, like it doesn't make sense he had any guns at all in the first place if he had a criminal record and had bipolar one. Like, I don't know. It just is odd.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, how did your school recover? Like, I imagine it took, like, you know, such a long, you know, it takes time, you know? So, like, how, what did you guys do, like, you know, after this incident?
It was really weird. I think maybe it was, like, just a different time. And I grew up in a very conservative, small town. And in my little town, it was kind of understood of, like, we're moving on. Like, get over it, move on, don't talk about it. And because of that, I think a lot of people were really suffering and nobody said anything. Like, I know I was suffering and I didn't say anything because I didn't want to be like the one weird person who was like messed up when everyone else is like fine. So I think like it was 15 years ago, right? But people have been contacting me because of Forward and saying, oh my God, I felt the same way. And I had no idea anyone felt that way but me. And I guess that's part of why I think this is important, is that I want people to know that if they've gone through something really, really hard, whether or not it's a shooting, it is okay to seek help. And it's okay to feel like you're not quite okay, because it would be weird if you just snap back to normal the next day. That's not how the brain works. So, but that's kind of how my town expected it to be. And so people were like silently trying to find ways to deal and coping in really dangerous ways, whether that was what they were cutting themselves or they were drinking too much or they were doing drugs or they were having sex before they were really ready to or whatever. People were taking really dangerous risk for people who were 15, 16, 17 years old. And yeah, I just feel like I've veered off there. I'm trying to remember what your original question. Oh, how the community healed. Yeah, I don't think we did. I don't think we did. I think people either grew up and moved out and sought help and healed, or they like stuffed it away somewhere that they just didn't ever deal with it.
I also read that you went to the, like after he killed himself, after the shooter killed himself, you went to his house, I think.
Yeah, so I read his suicide note, which is a weird thing to do, but I was trying to, it was important to me to understand like that this was a real person, because for me, like my whole life, I've just been so angry at like, oh my God, what a messed up, horrible person. And I can't forgive him. And it's so bad. And when I wrote the script, I realized like, no, he was a person who was suffering. Like that does not excuse what he did at all, but he had severe, severe, severe mental illness and he was homeless and he had no resources. He had nowhere to go. And I can't imagine how scary that would be to go from having like a working mind that worked, you know, correctly and you're smart and whatever. And then all of a sudden you don't know what's real and what's not. It's like, oh my God. So anyway, it was important for me as I wrote the script that I wanted people to have empathy for this person. And in order for them to have empathy, then I needed to have some and I didn't. So I really needed to come to terms with like, understanding that he was a flawed person, just like we all are in ways. And yeah, there was an address in the suicide note of where he was staying, like right before he became homeless. And it's actually really close to my current house. So it was really weird and creepy to go. I like drove over there and like sat in the parking lot. And I think I did that with the expectation that I was going to like freak out and have a lot of emotions. And then that was going to be helpful for writing or something. But I didn't. And it was actually kind of a powerful moment because I finally realized that like this person doesn't control me anymore. Like for so many years, I let that horrible thing that he did control my choices and control my happiness. And I was so depressed for such a long time. And I always boiled it back down to like that horrible person because I hadn't forgiven him. And I don't know if I would say I've 100% forgiven him, but I've at least like breached the subject of like, you can't let this control your life for the rest of your life because you will have a horrible life. And that was the goal of this horrible situation, was to mess up a bunch of people's lives. And if I continue to let my life be messed up, then he wins. So it was a really, yeah, it was a weird thing that I did, but it was interesting. It was kind of a cool experience to be like, oh, there's less of a charge here than I thought there would be. I don't feel as like, mm-hmm. It doesn't feel as brutal as I thought it was gonna.
Yeah.
Well, that means I'd grown
yeah
a little bit.
Of course, yeah. While I was listening to the podcast, like, it was, like, more like a mystery, and I was actually listening to it during my bios class.
Her teacher's probably like, what is she?
So, it was, like, I honestly enjoyed every single minute of it, because it's, like, you know, made me think, like, I would want to binge listen to the whole show, and, like, I'm like, I need to know what happens next. Like, I really need to know.
That's cool. And fortunately, now all of season one is published, so it is bingeable as of a few days ago. So it is ready for your bingeable enjoyment.
Yeah, so we will link the podcast down below, so make sure everyone go listen to the podcast. Yeah.
It was an honor, to be honest, to interview, because we were reading through the website, and like, before I actually contacted you, Taylor, I was like, you know, you were saying, you also, like, I think you commented on the group, the She Podcast group, right? Mm-hmm. So I was reading it. I was like, oh my God, a survivor of the shooting. And then I told Mega was like, yeah, sure, let's just, you know, schedule a date quickly, email her and stuff. And then I got a response from you, which was really good. And I was reading, we were reading your website last week, actually. And we were, like, doing the script, and it was, like, so, like, our whole team was, like, surprised, like, oh my God, your team won Oscars, Golden Globe. Like, it was so, oh my God. And we were like, oh my God, I can't believe we're interviewing.
Who is this person? Exactly. Well, it is an honor to be a part of your podcast. And it's been really interesting, because I've gotten to do interviews like this, probably like 30 of them or something at this mm-hmm. point. And I haven't gotten to do any with people who are actually in their teenage years, which is what Forward is about. So I was like so excited when I saw your email of like, oh, wonderful. Like, here's like people who are actually going to really understand the subject matter. They're going to be able to resonate with the characters and like the point they're at in their lives. And so I was really excited to get to do this with you guys today.
Yeah, same. Yeah, as Pasha said, yeah, I've also, this is very interesting talk too about, you know, your life as a director and a production manager, the shooting survivor. Yeah, because it's something that Pasha and I, like our generation, you know, goes through during school. So it was very interesting to learn your point of view and to learn more about this. And yeah.
Well, very cool. It was really nice to meet you both.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
So as always, thanks for listening to this episode. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And again, Taylor, thank you so much. And yeah, so subscribe to our YouTube channel for more fun and entertaining episodes. Special guests will be aired on YouTube, and other collabs will be on other broadcasting platforms. Visit our website, megaversion.com, and email us at megaversion2020@gmail.com if you have any media or inquiry requests. Feedback is always appreciated.
Have a great day, everyone. It's me, Varsha.
And Mega,
signing off.